prior to the interview how a bad employee would screw up in the position you are discussing with the employer, individual or team. Such things as come in late, take too much time off, follow his or her own agenda instead of the employer's, etc. By your actions and words before, during, and after the interview, plan to show the employer how much you are the very opposite. You show up on time or ahead of time. During the interview, you are preoccupied with the employer's agenda, not your own. And your sole goal is to increase the organization's effectiveness, service, and bottom line. Conversation tip number 9. It's the small things that are the killers in a job interview. Okay, you're in the interview. You're ready with your carefully rehearsed summary of your experience, skills, and knowledges. But the employer isn't listening. Because sitting across from you, they are noticing things about you that will kill the interview and the job offer. I think of this as losing to mosquitoes when you were prepared to fight dragons, and losing in the first 2 minutes. Ouch. So what's going on? Simply this. The best interviewers operate intuitively on the principle that microcosm reveals macrocosm. They believe that what you do in some small universe reveals how you would and will act in a larger universe. They watch you carefully during the small universe of the interview because they assume that each of your behaviors there reveals how you would act in a larger universe like the job. They scrutinize your past, as in your resume, for the same reason. Microcosm. Your behavior in the past reveals macrocosm, your likely behavior in the future. So let us look at what mosquitoes, as it were, can fly in during the first 30 seconds to 2 minutes of your interview so that the person who has the power to hire you starts muttering to themselves, "I sure hope we have some other candidates besides this one." 1. Your appearance and personal habits. Survey after survey has revealed that you are much more likely to get the job if you have obviously freshly bathed and groomed, and you have on freshly laundered clothes, pants or pantsuits with a sharp crease, and shoes, not flip-flops, freshly polished, and you have freshly brushed and flossed your teeth so that you do not have bad breath. Do not dispense the odor of garlic, onion, stale tobacco, or strong drink or mouthwash, a dead giveaway, into the enclosed office air. And equally, you are not wafting tons of aftershave cologne or overwhelming perfume 15 feet ahead of you when you enter the room. Employers have become super sensitive these days to the fact that many employees and employers are allergic to certain scents. You do not have a whole lot of tattoos clearly visible in the interview. Now, to be sure, not all tattoos are offensive. Tattoos are everywhere these days, on movie stars, singers, dancers, athletes, and everyday people. Some body art is tiny and discreet, in which case this doesn't apply to you. But if you have tattoos that are gang-related or otherwise off-putting, and you're afraid a particular employer that you want very much to work for is going to think badly of you upon seeing them, weigh carefully if you value the tattoo more than a job there. 2. Nervous mannerisms. It is a turnoff for many employers if you continually avoid eye contact with the employer. In fact, this is a big, big no-no. Or you give a limp handshake. Or you slouch in your chair, or endlessly fidget with your hands, or crack your knuckles, or constantly play with your hair during the interview. 3. Lack of self-confidence. It is a turnoff for many employers if you are speaking so softly you cannot be heard, or so loudly you can be heard 2 rooms away, or you are giving answers in an extremely hesitant fashion. Or You are giving only one-word answers. No, yes, maybe, not yet, I think so, to all the employer's questions. Or you are constantly interrupting the employer. Or you are downplaying your achievements or abilities, or are continuously being self-critical in comments you make about yourself during the interview. 4. The consideration you show to other people. It is a turnoff for many employers if you show a lack of courtesy to the receptionist, assistant, and, if at lunch, to the server. Or you display extreme criticalness toward your previous employers and places of work. Or you drink strong stuff during the interview process. Ordering a drink if the employer takes you to lunch has become a complete no-no, as it raises the question in the employer's mind, do they normally stop with one or do they normally keep on going? Don't do it, even if they do. Or you forget to thank the interviewer as you're leaving, or forget to send a thank you note afterward that same day. Says one human resources expert, a prompt brief letter thanking me for my time, along with a brief synopsis of his or her unique qualities, communicates to me that this person is an assertive, motivated, customer service-oriented salesperson who utilizes technology and knows the rules of the game. These are qualities I'm looking for. At the moment, I receive approximately one such letter for every 15 candidates interviewed. 5. Your values. It is a complete turnoff for many employers if they see in you any sign of arrogance or excessive aggressiveness, any sign of tardiness or failure to keep appointments and commitments on time, including these interviews, or any sign of laziness or lack of motivation, or any sign of constant complaining or blaming things on others, or any signs of dishonesty or lying, especially on your resume or during the interviews, or any signs of irresponsibility or tendency to goof off, or any sign of not following instructions or obeying rules, or any sign of a lack of enthusiasm for this organization and what it is trying to do, or any sign of instability, inappropriate response, and the like, or the other ways in which you evidence your values, such as what things impress you or don't impress you in their office, or what you are willing to sacrifice in order to get this job, and what you are not willing to sacrifice in order to get this job, or your enthusiasm for work, or the carefulness with which you did or didn't research this company before you came in, and blah, blah, blah. Incidentally, many an employer will watch to see if you smoke, either in the office or at lunch. In a race between two equally qualified people, the non-smoker will win out over the smoker 94% of the time, according to a study done by a professor of business at Seattle University. Sorry to report this, but take it seriously. So, there you have it. These are the metaphorical mosquitoes that can kill you when you're on the watch for dragons during the hiring interviews. One favor I ask of you. Do not write me telling me how picayune or asinine some of this is. I know that. I'm not reporting the world as it should be, and certainly not as I would like it to be. I'm only reporting what study after study has revealed about the world as it is, and how it affects your chances of getting hired. But here's the good news. When all is said and done, you can kill all these mosquitoes. Yes, you control and can change every one of these factors. Go back and read the list and see. Conversation tip number 10. Be aware of the skills most employers are looking for these days, regardless of the position you are seeking. They are looking for employees who are punctual, arriving at work on time, or better yet, early, who stay until quitting time, or even leave late, who are dependable, who have a good attitude, who have drive, energy, and enthusiasm, who want more than a paycheck, who are self-disciplined, well-organized, highly motivated, and good at managing their time, who can handle people well, who can use language effectively, who can work on a computer, who are committed to teamwork, who are flexible and can respond to novel situations or adapt when circumstances at work change, who are trainable and love to learn, who are project-oriented and goal-oriented, who have creativity and are good at problem-solving, who have integrity, who are loyal to the organization, and who are able to identify opportunities, markets, and coming trends. So, plan on claiming all of these that you legitimately can, and prior to the interview, sit down, make a list, and jot down some experience you have had for each that proves you have that skill. Conversation tip number 11. Try to think of some way to bring evidence of your skills to the hiring interview. For example, if you are an artist, a craftsperson, or anyone who produces a product, try to bring a sample of what you have made or produced in scrapbook or portfolio form, on a flash drive, on YouTube, in photos, or if you are a programmer, examples of your code, and so on. Conversation tip number 12. Do not badmouth your previous employers during the interview, even if they were terrible people. Employers sometimes feel as though they are a fraternity or sorority. During the interview, you want to come across as one who displays courtesy toward all members of that fraternity or sorority. Badmouthing a previous employer only makes this employer who is interviewing you worry about what you would say about them after they hire you. I learned this in my own experience. I once spoke graciously about a previous employer during a job interview. Unbeknownst to me, the interviewer already knew that my previous employer had badly mistreated me. He therefore thought very highly of me because I didn't badmouth the guy. In fact, he never forgot this incident, talked about it for years afterward. Plan on saying something nice about any previous employer. Or if you are pretty sure that the fact you and they didn't get along will surely come out, then try to nullify this ahead of time by saying something simple like, I usually get along with everybody, but for some reason my past employer and I just didn't get along. Don't know why. It's never happened to me before. Hope it never happens again. Conversation tip number 13. Throughout the interview, keep in mind, employers don't really care about your past. They only ask about it in order to try to predict your future behavior with them, if they decide to hire you. They have fears, of course. Don't we all? Legally, U.S. employers may only ask you questions that are related to the requirements and expectations of the job. They cannot ask about such things as your creed, religion, race, age, sexual orientation, or marital status. But any other questions about your past are fair game, and they will ask them if they know what they're doing. Therefore, during the hiring interview, before you answer any question the employer asks you about your past, you should pause to think, what fear about the future caused them to ask this question about my past? And then address that fear subtly or directly. Here are some examples. Employer's question, tell me about yourself. The fear behind the question. The employer is afraid he or she isn't going to conduct a very good interview by failing to ask the right questions, or is afraid there's something wrong with you and is hoping you will blurt it out. The point you try to get across. You are a good employee, as you have proved in the past at your other jobs. Give the briefest history of who you are, where born and raised, interests, hobbies, and kind of work you have enjoyed the most to date. Keep it to 2 minutes max. Phrases you might use to get this across. In describing your work history, use any honest phrases you can about your work history. that are self-complimentary. Hard worker. Came in early, left late. Always did more than was expected of me, etc. You can find this same analysis of 7 more employer questions in the PDF files included with this audiobook. The 7 other questions are, what kind of work are you looking for? Have you ever done this kind of work before? Why did you leave your last job? Or how did you get along with your former boss and coworkers? How is your health? Or how much were you absent from work during your last job? Can you explain why you've been out of work so long? Or can you tell me why there are these gaps in your work history? Usually said after studying your resume. Wouldn't this job represent a step down for you? Or, I think this job would be way beneath your talents and experience. Or, don't you think you would be underemployed if you took this job? And last, tell me, what is your greatest weakness? Conversation tip number 14. As the interview proceeds, you want to quietly notice the time frame of the questions the employer is asking, because it's a way of measuring how the interview is going. If it's going favorably for you, the time frame of the employer's questions will often move, however slowly, through the following stages. 1. Distant past. For example, where did you attend high school? 2. Immediate past. For example, tell me about your most recent job. 3. Present. For example, what kind of a job are you looking for? 4. Immediate future. For example, would you be able to come back for another interview next week? 5. Distant future. For example, where would you like to be 5 years from now? Well, you get the point. The more the time frame of the interviewer's questions moves from the past to the future, the more favorably you may assume the interview is going for you. On the other hand, if the interviewer's questions stay firmly in the past, the outlook is not so good. Oh well, you can't win them all. When the time frame of the interviewer's questions moves firmly into the future, then is the time for you to get more specific about the job in question. Experts say it is essential for you to ask, at that point, these kinds of questions if you don't already know the answers. What is the job specifically that I am being considered for? If I were hired, what duties would I be performing? What would you be hiring me to accomplish? What responsibilities would I have? Would I be working with a team or group? To whom would I report? Remember, the communication skills and personal warmth of an employee's supervisor are often crucial in determining the employee's tenure and performance. In fact, recent research shows that the quality of the supervisor may be more important than the experience and individual attributes of the workers themselves. Whose responsibility is it to see that I get the training I need here to get up to speed? How would I be evaluated? How often and by whom? What were the strengths and weaknesses of previous people in this position? May I meet the persons I would be working with and for, if it isn't you? Optional. If you don't mind my asking, I'm curious as to why you yourself decided to work at this organization. Optional. What do you wish you had known about this company before you started here? Conversation tip number 15. Before you leave the final interview there, assuming you have decided that you like them and maybe they like you, there are 5 questions you should always ask. 1. Can you offer me this job? I know this seems stupid, but it is astonishing, at least to me, how many job hunters have secured a job simply by being bold enough to ask for it at the end of the final interview in language they feel comfortable with. I don't know why this is. I only know that it is. Anyway, if after hearing all about this job at this place, you decide you'd really like to have it, you must ask for it. The worst thing the employer can say is no, or We need some time to think about all the interviews we're conducting. 2. When may I expect to hear from you? If the employer says, we need some time to think about this, or, we will be calling you for another interview, you don't want to leave this as a vague good intention on the employer's part. You want to nail it down. 3. Might I ask, what would be the latest I can expect to hear from you? The employer has probably given you their best guess in answer to your previous question. Now you want to know, what is the worst-case scenario? Incidentally, when I was job hunting once, and I asked my interviewer when was the latest I might expect to hear from him, he replied, never. I thought he had a great sense of humor. Turned out, he was dead serious. 4. May I contact you after that date if for any reason you haven't gotten back to me by that time? Some employers resent this question. You'll know that is the case if they snap at you. But most employers appreciate your offering them what is, in essence, a safety net. They know they can get busy, become overwhelmed with other things, forget their promise to you. It's reassuring in such a case for you to offer to rescue them. 5. Optional. Can you think of anyone else who might be interested in my skills and experience? This question is invoked only if they replied no to your first question above. Jot down any answers they give you, then stand up, thank them sincerely for their time, give them a firm handshake, and leave. In the following days, rigorously keep to all that you said, and don't contact them except with that mandatory thank you note, until after the latest deadline you two agreed upon in answer to question number 4. If you do have to contact them after that date, and if they tell you things are still up in the air, you should gently ask questions number 2, number 3, and number 4 all over again. Conversation tip number 16. Every expert on interviewing will tell you 2 things. 1. Thank you notes must be sent after every interview by every job hunter. And 2, most job hunters ignore this advice. Indeed, it is safe to say that it is the most overlooked step in the entire job hunting process. If you want to stand out from the others applying for the same job, send thank you notes to everyone you met there that day. Ask if they have a business card. And if not, ask them to write out their name and address. Do this with secretaries, who often hold the keys to the kingdom, as well as with your interviewer. If you need any additional encouragement to send thank you letters, besides the fact that it may get you the job, here are 6 more reasons for sending a thank you note, especially to the one who interviewed you. First, you are presenting yourself as one who has good skills with people. Your actions with respect to the job interview must back this claim up. Sending a thank you note does that. The employer can see you are good with people. You remembered to thank them. Second, it helps the employer recall who you are. Very helpful if they've seen a dozen people that day. Third, if a committee will be involved in the hiring process, but only one member was at the first interview, the man or woman who first interviewed you has something to show the others on the committee. Fourth, if the interview went rather well, and if the employer seemed to show an interest in further talks, the thank you note can reiterate your interest in further talks. Fifth, the thank you note gives you an opportunity to correct any wrong impression you left behind. You can add anything you forgot to tell them that you want them to know. And from among all the things you two discussed, you can underline the 2 or 3 points that you most want to stand out in their minds. Lastly, if the interview did not go well, or you lost all interest in working there and this thank you note is sort of goodbye and thanks, keep in mind that they may hear of openings elsewhere that would be of interest to you. In the thank you note, you can mention this and ask them to please let you know if they hear of anything anywhere. If this was a kind man or woman who interviewed you, they may send you additional leads. Conclusion. There is no magic in job hunting. No techniques work all the time. I hear regularly from job hunters who report that they paid attention to all the tips I have mentioned in this chapter and the book and are quite skilled at securing interviews, but they never get hired. And they want to know what they're doing wrong. Sometimes it is because there are levels of screening, some within your sight, some beyond your sight. And everything may appear to be going well on the levels you can see, but not necessarily on the levels you can't see. Still puzzled about why you're not getting hired? Sometimes, unfortunately, the answer is, you're not doing anything wrong. I don't know how often this happens, but I know it does happen. Namely, some employers play despicable tricks on job hunters, whereby they invite you in for an interview despite the fact that they have already hired someone for the position in question. And they know from the beginning that they have absolutely no intention of hiring you, not in a million years. You are cheered, of course, by the ease with which you get these interviews, but unbeknownst to you, the manager who is interviewing you, we'll say it's a he, has a personal friend he already agreed to give the job to. Only one small problem remains. The state or the federal government gives funds to this organization and has mandated that this position be open to all. So this manager must pretend to interview 10 candidates, including his favorite, as though the job opening were still available. But he intended, from the beginning, to reject the other 9 and give the job to his favorite. You were selected for the honor of being among those 9 rejectees. You will, of course, be baffled as to why you got turned down. Trouble is, you will never know. On the other hand, maybe no games are being played. You are getting rejected at place after place, because there is something really wrong with the way you are coming across during these hiring interviews. Employers will rarely ever tell you this. You will never hear them say something like, "Hey, you came across as just too cocky and arrogant during the interview." You will almost always be left in the dark as to what it is you're doing wrong. If you feel daring, there is a strategy you can try. If you've been interviewed by a whole bunch of employers, whoever was the friendliest of them all may want to help you. I say may. You can always try phoning, reminding them of who you are, and then asking the following question, deliberately kept generalized, vague, unrelated to just that place, and above all, future-directed. Something like, "I'd appreciate some advice. I've been on several interviews at several different places now. From what you've seen, is there something about me in an interview that you think might be causing me not to get hired at those places? If so, I'd really appreciate your giving me some pointers so I can do better in my future hiring interviews." Most of the time, they'll duck. Their legal advisor, if they have one, will certainly advise against it. First of all, they're afraid of lawsuits. Second, they don't know how you will use what they might have to say. Said an old military veteran to me one day, "I used to think it was my duty to tell everyone the truth. Now, I only give it to those who can use it." But occasionally, you will run into a compassionate and kind employer who is willing to risk giving you the truth because they think you will use it wisely. If so, thank them from the bottom of your heart, no matter how painful their feedback is. Such advice, seriously heeded, can bring about just the changes in your interviewing strategy that you most need in order to win during interviews in the future. In the absence of any such help from employers who interviewed you, you might want to get a good business friend of yours to role-play a mock hiring interview with you, in case they immediately see something glaringly wrong with how you're coming across. When all else fails, I would recommend you go to a career coach who charges by the hour and put yourself in their tender, knowledgeable hands. Role play an interview with them and take their advice seriously. You've just paid for it, after all. In interviewing, as elsewhere in your job hunt, the secret is to find out anything that is within your control, even if it's only 2%, and change it. And if you do get the job, make one resolution to yourself right there on the spot. Plan to keep track of your accomplishments at this new job on a weekly basis, jotting them down every weekend in your own private log. Career experts recommend you do this without fail. You can then summarize these accomplishments annually on a one-page sheet for your boss's eyes when the question of a raise or promotion comes up. For additional reading and guidance, What Color Is Your Parachute? Guide to Rethinking Interviews, a little over $10 online or at bookstores. The 10 Commandments for Job Interviews, whereby your chances of finding a job are vastly increased. 1. Go after new small organizations with fewer than 50 employees at first, since they create nearly two-thirds of all new jobs. Only if you turn up nothing should you broaden the search to slightly larger organizations, those with 50 employees. Then, if that doesn't prove to be a successful strategy, organizations with 100 employees. 2. Hunt for places to interview using the aid of, say, 80 friends and acquaintances, because a job hunt requires 80 pairs of eyes and ears. But first, do homework on yourself so you can tell them exactly what you are looking for. 3. As for who to interview, once you've identified a place that interests you, you really need to find out who has the power to hire you there for the position you want, and use bridge people, those who know you and also know them, to get an introduction to that person. Employ LinkedIn.com and similar to find these people. 4. Do thorough homework on an organization before going there, using informational interviews, plus the internet, to find out as much about them as you possibly can. If you have a public library in town, ask there too. 5. Then prepare for the interview with your own agenda, your own questions and curiosities about whether or not this job fits you. This will always impress employers. 6. If you initiated the appointment, ask for just 19 minutes of their time and keep to your word strictly. Watch your watch. 7. When answering a question of theirs, talk only between 20 seconds and 2 minutes at any one time. Try to be succinct. Don't keep rattling on out of nervousness. 8. Basically, approach them not as a job beggar, but humbly as a resource person, able to produce better work for that organization than any of the people who worked in that position previously. 9. At the end of the interviewing process, ask for the job. Given all that we have discussed, can you offer me this job? Salary negotiation should only happen when they have definitely said they want you. Prior to that, it's pointless. 10. Always write a thank you note the same evening as the interview, and mail it at the latest by early next morning. This in addition to emailing it. The tendency these days is for job hunters to only email a thank you note. You will stand out from the others if you do both. Students spend 4 or more years learning how to dig data out of the library and other sources, but it rarely occurs to them that they should also apply some of the same newfound research skill to their own benefit, to looking up information on companies, types of professions, sections of the country that might interest them. Professor Albert Shapiro, Ohio State University, died 1985. Chapter 9, The 6 Secrets of Salary Negotiation. Salary. It must be discussed before you finally agree to take the job, once they've offered it to you. I hope you know that. I remember talking to a breathless high school graduate who was elated at having just landed her first job. "How much are they going to pay you?" I asked. She looked startled. "I don't know," she said. "I never asked. I just assume they will pay me a fair wage." Boy, did she get a rude awakening when she received her first paycheck. It was so miserably low she couldn't believe her eyes. And thus did she learn, painfully, what you must learn too. Before accepting a job offer, always ask about salary. Indeed, ask, and then negotiate. It's the negotiate that throws fear into our hearts. So many of us feel ill-prepared to do that. Well, set your mind at ease. It's not all that difficult. While whole books can be, and have been, written on this subject, there are basically just six secrets to keep in mind. The first secret of salary negotiation. Never discuss salary until the end of the whole interviewing process at that organization when, and if, they have definitely said they want you. The end of the interviewing process is difficult to define. It's the point at which the employer says, or thinks, "We've got to get this person." That may be at the end of the first, and therefore the last, interview, or it may be at the end of a whole series of interviews, often with different people within the same company or organization, or with a whole bunch of them all at once. But assuming things are going favorably for you, whether after the first or second or third or fourth interview, if you like them, and they increasingly like you, a job offer will be made. Then and only then is it time to deal with the question that is inevitably on any employer's mind. How much is this person going to cost me? And the question that is on your mind, how much does this job pay? If the employer raises the salary question earlier, say near the beginning of the interview, asking innocently, "What kind of salary are you looking for?" you should have three responses ready at your fingertips. Response number one. If the employer seems like a kindly man or woman, your best or most tactful reply might be, "Until you've decided you definitely want me, and I've decided I definitely could help you with your tasks or projects here, I feel any discussion of salary is premature." That will work in most cases. There are instances, however, where that doesn't work. Then you need response number two. You may be face-to-face with an employer who demands within the first 2 minutes of the interview to know what salary you are looking for. That is not good. Especially since 2008, as some employers can afford to be really picky, since, in their minds, there is a plentiful bunch of job hunters to choose from. So here, you may need a backup response, such as, "I'll gladly answer that, but could you first help me understand what this job involves?" That's a good response in most cases, but what if it doesn't work? Then you'll need to fall back on response number three. The employer, with rising voice, says, "Come, come, don't play games with me. I want to know what salary you're looking for." Okay, that's that. You have to come clean. But you don't have to mention a single figure. Instead, you can answer in terms of a range. For example, "I'm looking for a salary in the range of $35,000 to $45,000 a year." If that still doesn't satisfy them, then clearly you are being interviewed by an employer who has no range in mind. Their beginning figure is their ending figure. No negotiation is possible. This happens, when it does, because many employers, since 2008, are making salary their major, if not sole, criterion for deciding who to hire and who not to hire. It's an old game. Among two equally qualified candidates, the one who is willing to work for the least pay wins, and that is that. If you run into this situation, you may decide this isn't the kind of place you want to work at. For if they're inflexible in this, what else will they be inflexible about once you take the job? You've been warned. Microcosm equals macrocosm. On the other hand, if you're flat broke and you need this job, any job, desperately, you will have no choice but to give in. Ask what salary they have in mind and make your decision. Of course, you can always try postponing your decision a day or so by saying, "I need a little time to think about this." However, all the foregoing is merely the worst-case scenario. Usually, things won't go this badly where you feel so powerless. In most interviews these days, the employer, alone or in a group, will be willing to save salary negotiation until they have finally decided they want you, and you've decided you want them. And at that point, the salary will be negotiable. I'll explain why in the next secret. For now, let me hammer home this first secret. It is in your best interest to not discuss salary until all of the following conditions have been fulfilled. Not until they've gotten to know you at your best, so they can see how you stand out above the other applicants, and therefore how you're worth more than they would pay them. Not until you've gotten to know them as completely as you can, so you can tell if this really is a place where you want to work. Not until you found out exactly what the job entails. Not until they've had a chance to find out how well you match their job requirements. Not until you're in the final interview at that place for that job. Not until you've decided, "I really would like to work here." Not until they've conveyed to you their feelings, such as, "Well, that's good because we want you." Or better yet, not until they've conveyed the feeling, "We've got to have you." If you'd prefer this be put down in the form of a timeline, here it is. When to negotiate salary. Your bargaining position increases with each of these four stages. Who are you? We like you. We love you. We must have you. This is the best time to negotiate before they think, "We got you." It all boils down to this. If you really shine during the hiring interview, they may, at the end, offer you a higher salary than they originally had in mind when the interview started. And this is particularly the case when the interview has gone so well that they're now determined to obtain you. The second secret of salary negotiation. The purpose of salary negotiation is to uncover the most that an employer is willing to pay to get you. Negotiation. There's the word that strikes terror into the hearts of most job hunters or career changers. Why do we have to negotiate? Simple. It would never be necessary if every employer in every hiring interview were to mention, right from the start, the top figure they are willing to pay for that position. A few employers do, and that's the end of any salary negotiation. But most employers don't. They know from the beginning of the interview the top figure they're willing to pay for this position under discussion, but they're hoping they'll be able to get you for less. So they start the bidding, for that is what it is, lower than they're ultimately willing to go. And this creates a range. A range between the lowest they're hoping to pay versus the highest they can afford to pay. And that range is what the negotiation is all about. For example, if the employer can afford to pay you $30 an hour, but wants to try to get you for $18 an hour, the range is $18 to $30. You have every right to try to negotiate the highest salary the employer is willing to pay you within that range. Nothing's wrong with the goals of either of you. The employer's goal is to save money if possible, Your goal is to bring home to your own household the most money that you can for the work you will be doing. The third secret of salary negotiation. During salary discussion, never be the first one to mention a salary figure. Where salary negotiation has been successfully kept off stage for much of the interview process, when it finally does come up, you want the employer to be the first one to mention a figure, if you possibly can. Why? Nobody knows. But it has been observed over the years that where the goals are opposite, as in this case, you are trying to get the employer to pay the most they can, and the employer is trying to pay the least they can, whoever mentions a salary figure first generally loses. You can speculate from now until the cows come home as to why this is so. There are a dozen theories. All we really know for sure is that it is true. Inexperienced employer interviewers often don't know this strange rule, but experienced ones are very aware of it. That's why they will try to get you to mention a figure first by asking you some innocent-sounding question like, "What kind of salary are you looking for?" Well, how kind of them to ask me what I want, you may be thinking. No, no, no. Kindness has nothing to do with it. They are hoping you will be the first to mention a figure because they've learned this lesson from 10,000 interviews in the past. Accordingly, if they ask you to be the first to name a figure, the simple counter move you should have at the ready is, "Well, you created this position, so you must have some figure in mind, and I'd be interested in first hearing what that figure is." The fourth secret of salary negotiation. Before you go to the interview, do some careful research on typical salaries for your field and in that organization. As I said, salary negotiation is required any time the employer does not open the discussion of salary by naming the top figure they have in mind, but starts instead with a lower figure. Okay, so here is the $64,000 question. How do you tell whether the figure the employer first offers you is only their starting bid or is their final offer? The answer is by doing some research on the field and that organization before you ever go in for an interview. "Oh, come on," I can hear you say. "Isn't this more trouble than it's worth?" No, it's not. If you want to win the salary negotiation, there is a financial penalty exacted from those who are too lazy or in too much of a hurry to go gather this information. In plain language, if you don't do this research, it'll cost you. Let's say it takes you from 1 to 3 days to run down this sort of information on the 3 or 4 organizations that interest you the most. And let us say that because you've done this research, when you finally come to the end of the final interview for a job there, you are able to ask for and obtain a salary that is, let's say, $15,000 a year higher than you would otherwise have gotten. That's not unrealistic. In the next 3 years, then, you will be earning $45,000 extra because of your salary research. Not bad pay for just 1 to 3 days' work. And it can be even more. It doesn't always happen, but I know many job hunters and career changers to whom it has. It's certainly worth a shot. Okay, then. How do you do this research? Well, there are two ways to go, online and off. Let's look at each in turn. Salary research online. If you want to research salaries for particular geographical regions, positions, occupations, or industries, or even, sometimes, organizations, here are some free sites that may give you just what you're looking for. http://jobstar.org/tools/salary/index.php. This site is a treasure trove. It links to 300 different sites that maintain salary lists. And joy, joy, it is kept updated. It's one of the largest and most complete lists of salary reviews on the web, maintained by a genius named Mary Ellen Mort. www.salary.com. The most visited of all the salary-specific job sites, with a wide variety of information about salaries. It was started by Kent Plunkett and acquired by Conexa Corporation in August 2010. It has expanded a lot over the years. Roll over the green navigation bar at the top to see all its resources. www.bls.gov/OOH. The Bureau of Labor Statistics Survey of Salaries in Individual Occupations from the Occupational Outlook Handbook 2018 to 2019. It lists jobs that are highest paying and or jobs that are the fastest growing and or jobs that have the highest number of openings. www.bls.gov/OES/OES_EMP.htm. The Bureau of Labor Statistics Survey of Salaries in Individual Industries. It's a companion piece to the handbook. Over a period of 3 years, it surveys 1.2 million establishments to get their figures. www.myplan.com. This site has a list of the highest paying jobs in America for those without a college degree. Under Careers, click on Top 10 Lists. www.salaryexpert.com. When you need a salary expert, it makes sense to go to The Salary Expert. Lots of stuff on the subject of salaries here, including a free salary report for hundreds of job titles, varying by area, skill level, and experience. It also has some salary calculators. I find the site a little complicated to navigate, but maybe that's just me. www.glassdoor.com. This site allows you to search job titles and their corresponding average salaries in your area. It also features employee reviews from over 600,000 companies. If you strike out on all the above sites, then you're going to have to get a little more clever and work a little harder and pound the pavement, as I shall describe next. Salary research off the internet. Okay, so how do you do salary research offline? Well, there's a simple rule. Generally speaking, abandon books and go talk to people. Use books and libraries only as a second or last resort. You can get much more complete and up-to-date information from people who are doing the kind of job you're interested in, maybe at another company or organization, than the ones you're interested in. If you don't know where to find them, talk to people at a nearby university or college who train such people, whatever their department may be. Teachers and professors will usually know what their graduates are making. Also, you can go visit actual workplaces. Let's look at some concrete examples. First example, a fast food place. You may not need to do any salary research. They pay what they pay. You can walk in, ask for a job application, and interview with the hiring manager. He or she will usually tell you the pay outright. It's usually set in concrete. But at least it's easy to discover what the pay is. Incidentally, filling out an application or even having an interview there doesn't mean you have to take that job, but you probably already know that. Just say, I need to go home and think about this. You can decline any offer from any place. That's what makes this approach harmless. Second example, a construction company. This is typical of a place where you can't discover what the pay is right off the bat. If you're actually going to try to get work at that construction company, but you want to research salaries before you go for an interview, The best way to do this research is to go visit a different construction company in the same town or geographical area, one that isn't of much interest to you, and ask what people make there. Or if you don't know who to talk to there, fill out one of their applications and talk to the hiring person about what kinds of jobs they have or might have in the future. At which time, the prospective wages is a legitimate subject of inquiry. Then, having done this research on a place you don't care about, go back to the place that really interests you and apply. You still don't know exactly what they pay, but you do know what their competitor pays, which will usually be close to what you're trying to find out. Third example, a one-person office, besides the boss, obviously, working, say, as an administrative assistant. Here, you can often find useful salary information by perusing the help wanted ads in the local newspaper for a week or two, assuming you still have a local paper. Most of the ads won't mention a salary figure, but a few may. Among those that do, note what the lowest salary offering is and what the highest is, and see if the ad reveals any reasons for the difference. It's interesting how much you can learn about administrative assistant salaries with this approach. I know, because I was an administrative assistant myself once upon a time. There's a lot you can find out by talking to people. But another way to do salary research, if you're out of work and have time on your hands, is to find a temporary work agency that places different kinds of workers and let yourself be farmed out to various organizations. The more, the merrier. It's relatively easy to do salary research when you're inside a place. Study what that place pays the agency, not what the agency pays you after they've taken their cut. If you're working temporarily at a place where the other workers really like you, you'll be able to ask questions about a lot of things there, including salary. The fifth secret of salary negotiation. Research the range that the employer likely has in mind, and then define an interrelated range for yourself, relative to the employer's range. Okay, I admit this is a bit sophisticated, and you may not have the stomach to do this much research, but you ought to at least know how this works, just in case. It begins by defining your goal. What you want in your research is not just one salary figure. As you may recall, you want a range. A range defined by what's the least the employer may offer you and what's the most the employer may be willing to pay to get you. In any organization that has more than 5 employees, that range is comparatively easy to figure out. It will be less than what the person who would be above you makes, and more than what the person who would be below you makes. Examples. If the person who would be below you makes $75,000, and the person who would be above you makes $85,000, the range for your job would be $77,000 to $83,000. If the person who would be below you makes $30,000, and the person who would be above you makes $35,500, the range for your job would be $32,500 to $34,000. One teensy tiny little problem here. How do you find out the salary of those who would be above and below you? Well, first you have to find out their names or the names of their positions. If it is a small organization you're going after, one with 50 or fewer employees, finding out this information should be easy. Any employee who works there is likely to know the answer, and you can usually get in touch with one of those employees, or even an ex-employee through your own personal bridge people, people who know you and also know them. Since up to 2/3 of all new jobs are created by small companies of this size, that's the kind of organization you are likely to be researching anyway. On the other hand, if you are going after a larger organization, then you fall back on a familiar life preserver, namely, every person you know, family, friend, relative, business, or spiritual acquaintance, and ask them who they know that might know the company in question, and therefore the information you seek. LinkedIn should prove immensely helpful to you here in locating such people. If you're not already on it, get on it. www.linkedin.com